As long as you keep it sharpened and have strength in your hand to drag it across paper, a pencil will serve you well. There's a new book that contemplates the pencil and its glories by Henry Petrosky, a professor of civil engineering at Duke University. The book's called Pencil, A History of Design and Circumstance. Book critic John Leonard has this review.
Finally, a book that tells us, how does the lead get into the pencil? Though Henry Petrosky takes a long time getting to his point, and by the time he arrives, we already know that it's not lead anyway. It's a compound of graphite and other stuff. The American pencil consists, in fact, of graphites from Sri Lanka and Mexico, Mississippi clay and Oriental gum, in a case of California incense cedar with an eraser made out of South American rubber and Italian pumice stone. To achieve this pencil, you must know as much as Petrosky does about dyestuffs, shellacs and other resins, solvents, pigments, lacquers, inks and glues, drying, abrading, impregnating and extruding. From previous books by Petrosky, such as To Engineer is Human, we've learned to expect these delightful detours, not only through the chemical and mechanical arts, but in philosophy and politics as well. My only complaint about the pencil is that he complains too much that nobody's written about it before. If they had, he might not have. About engineering, Petrosky wants us to realize that unlike the pure science of the Newtonian sort, it begins with purpose, to which it adds research and development, after which there's marketing. Newton liked to walk on the beach. The implication, says Petrosky, is that the truths are whole in the ocean, and it's just a matter of time before they are found thrown up upon the shore. But abstract theories do not make pencils. Engineers do. If the so-called lead pencil only appeared in the middle of the 16th century, after millennia of unacceptable 18th dynasty Egyptian pig stickers, the Roman animal hair penicillium, the Chaucerian stylus with wax tablet, the reed pen, the bird quill, and the silver point, it was because of the discovery of a big load of graphite in Cumberland, England, in the Lake District, where all those poets came from. English hoarding led to the French Revolution and the Conte crayon. It also led to the fearful Fabers, those Teutonic pencil barons whose monarchism, obsessive secrecy, cruelty to factory workers, and sibling rivalry and fratricide opened the door to democratic American innovation and price-cutting. Which is where we meet Henry David Thoreau, who manufactured pencils as well as books. Nor is Thoreau Petrosky's only trafficking in highbrow culture. In his pages we'll also meet Cicero, D.H. Lawrence, Jane Austen, Toulouse-Lautrec, and Claude Lévi-Strauss, plus, of course, all those engineers who basically think with their pencils, after which they make artifacts, practical things like bridges and light bulbs and steam engines and bombs, even in Russia, which is rich in Siberian graphite, although not so much in China, where the lead falls out. Along this long way, reference is made to Diderot, Escher, and Edison. Fun is made of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and we are made to think about the pencil as humble servant, engineering miracle, and complicated metaphor. I found myself staring at the very yellow thing I used to mark the many pages of this marvelous book. I also remembered a witty remark Petrosky should have included. Asked why she'd missed her deadline at the New Yorker, a notoriously stingy magazine, Dorothy Parker explained, "Somebody was using the pencil."
John Leonard scribbles about television for New York Magazine as a columnist for New York Newsday and as media critic for CBS Sunday Morning. He reviewed The Pencil by Henry Petrosky.